Welcome to a Sober Girls Guide podcast, a lifestyle podcast based on sobriety and recovery. I'm your host and sober girl, Jessica Jabot. Inspired by my own sobriety and wellness journey, I want to spread the wealth of knowledge. Tune in each week for uncensored conversations about mental health, self-development, wellness and spirituality, and how they influence each guest's unique recovery journey. My goal is to educate and inspire and to let you know you are not alone on your recovery journey. Thanks so much for tuning in to a Sober Girls Guide podcast. Let's go! Hello, hello, and welcome to episode 74 of a Sober Girls Guide podcast. On today's episode, we have an epic, and I mean absolutely epic tale of sobriety and recovery. I'm talking living on Skid Row in downtown LA to living the life in Malibu and running a multi-million dollar company called, oh, you know, you might have heard of it, Sun Life Organics. Yes, it's like the hottest, most popular juice bar and health and wellness bar in LA and now across the world. Well, Khalil Rufati is here to tell us all about his journey, all about how he ended up on Skid Row, and he even wrote a book about it called I Forgot to Die. How fantastic is that title? We also dive into his love and appreciation for women. Now, this is epic. I had to even record a section and put it on my phone. Whenever I'm feeling down, I listen to this recording and to his words because it is so good, and it is so nice to hear another man, another perspective of, you know, just how women rule the world. So, without further ado, let's get into it. Guess what? Hangovers still suck. Was January a trial month for you? Because if you're anything like me, I need at least a month to settle into a new year, let alone a new decade. Well, booze-free February is here, and our 30-day to gain challenge will help you tackle all of that. The challenge will have you filling out 2 worksheets a day. You will find interesting things about yourself, maybe some things you never even knew. We will get daily emails that are motivational, inspirational, and educational to walk you through the process and what is actually happening with your body, how much money you're saving, and fun facts about what your body is doing. Give yourself some space. Give yourself a break from alcohol. Try the 30 Days to Gain Challenge now. Sign up at asobergirlsguide.com to join the challenge today. Khalil, I am so excited to talk to you. So the first time I met you, the first and only time, was at Unplugged in West Hollywood for your book release, I Forgot to Die.
Yes.
So it's an amazing story, but I was wondering if you could kind of bridge the gap for everyone listening, how you went from living on basically Skid Row, right? Downtown LA. Yeah. To this amazing, being an entrepreneur to the max, having an amazing smoothie bar and yoga studio. How does that even happen?
Yeah, I mean, that seems to be the sensational tagline of any article that has been written, and there's been a bunch, mm-hmm. and it's crazy. And every time I read one, I have to pinch myself. You know, some of them are a bit more extreme. Some of them go right to the point, like from homeless junkie to multimillionaire, which I get. They're trying to sell ad space, and then some of them are really, really beautiful. The New York Times did a really beautiful article on me a few years ago called "Proof of Life," which I loved. Mm. I love that title, "Proof of Life."
I love that title.
Yeah. And you know, playing off the title of my book, I Forgot to Die, yeah. which I thought was genius. And by the way, the dude that wrote that is also, I found out, the same guy that wrote Up in the Air. Did you see that movie, Up in the Air?
I didn't, but wow.
One of my favorite movies ever, because I'm so good at knowing what's going to happen in a movie. And I kind of pride mm-hmm. myself on that. And I always, when I'm with my girlfriend, I'll like lean over and whisper into her ear when we're at a movie theater, like, this is what's going to happen. And I'm typically right. That yeah. movie's ending knocked the shit out of me because there's no way you could have. And for anybody listening who's seen the movie, especially if you're a woman, you're laughing out loud right now, because there's nothing that could have prepared me for the ending of that movie. And it's an amazing movie. George Clooney's in it. I can't remember who the actress was that's in it, but it really, really sucks you in. And the dude that wrote the article on me wrote the book along with a bunch of other stuff. The guy's a genius.
Wow.
Yeah. So super flattered. But anyway, back to your question. So yeah, I mean, it's been June 18th, 2003 was when I finally threw in the towel and joined the winning team, so to speak.
Mm-hmm.
So that'll be 17 years, which I can't even believe. And honestly, to me, the fact that I don't have to get up or crawl out from, you know, some decrepit hellhole and go and panhandle in front of 7-Eleven or Chevron and get money so I can, quote unquote, get well, you know, to not wake up dope sick and to not wake up in jail and to not wake up in yet another hospital bed, to me is the real miracle. Because at the end of the day, making money or becoming successful, it's not that big of a deal. Getting clean and sober and staying clean and sober and for a sustained period of time. I mean, fuck, man, getting clean and sober for 30 days is a monumental task. Monumental.
Huge.
I remember when I was haunting the rooms because I had nowhere else to go, a different 12-step meetings, but 12-step meetings nonetheless. I remember, you know, getting so excited to take my 30-day or my 60-day or my 90-day chip. I don't know if you guys do that up in Canada, but down here they may give you like a little congratulatory chip. And I remember watching the numbers drop off slowly but surely as you approach 6 months, and then as you approach 9 months, and then as you approach the birthday thing. Like, you start out with a couple hundred people, and by time it's your time to take your 1 year cake, there's like two of you or three of you.
Yeah.
So getting clean and sober is that's the miracle. And right. I'm not trying to belittle all of the success and the obvious, I used to say grace of God, but now the level of success is to the point where the only way that I could ever become this successful would be because God has a sense of humor. I'm quite convinced of that. I'm quite convinced that God is a woman, and God has an incredible sense of humor, that she's going to take this broken little boy trapped in this old man's body, you know, with everything going against him, high school dropout, convicted felon, can't spell, can't type. I mean, you know, from personal experience, just in the last 5 minutes, I couldn't even turn on my fucking phone or computer and figure out how to do or whatever this is, a podcast. Yeah. So, you know, for God to take me and strike me sober and clean and just love me until I could love myself and shower me and cleanse me and bathe me with all of this grace. God has to be a woman, and God must have a sense of humor. There's a lot of people out there that are like, how in the fuck did that guy do that? And I just think God is laughing. So
absolutely.
It was brutal, and it wasn't fun. I mean, the first 2 years were absolute hell. I'm going to say it was very painful to get through those first few years. There was a lot of acting out. There was a lot of, they say it down here, where if you take a degenerate horse thief and you get them sober, what do you have? And the answer is a degenerate horse thief. I mean, in other words, I still was out like chasing newcomer girls, and I still was out slandering everyone and gossiping about everyone and talking shit about everyone, because I was in so much pain. I was in so much pain, and I was so jealous, because it seemed like, and you and I both know it's not true, but it seemed like everyone lived in a $1 million house. Everyone drove a Range Rover. Everyone had a hot girlfriend or boyfriend, and my life fucking sucked. So why should I be sober? Like, that was what my head told me. you know?
Oh my, no, absolutely. I feel the exact same way. And especially in meetings in LA.
Yeah, because everyone's beautiful and everyone's famous, yes, and everyone's rich. I mean, I remember, did you ever go, did you ever go to the one in Beverly Hills, the, like the famous one? I'm not supposed to mention
the Roxbury one.
You mentioned it.
Oh, yeah. Sorry. Oh,
no. I don't care. You live in Canada. I would get, they would yell at me. But anyway, yeah, I mean, I remember going there and, like, you know, I'm sure it wasn't the case, but it seemed like every person that spoke or that was there was like famous and rich and hot and fit. Yeah. And, you know, you'd look out in the parking lot and there was Bentleys there. There was Porsche there. And, you know, I was dying. I was like, well, you know, this is never going to happen for me and I'm never going to have this. And so why should I be sober? And I posted about this the other day on Instagram. I remember being, just like a couple of years in. So a lot of the really heavy lifting was done, but I was helping, I was sponsoring a guy. And he was super successful and, you know, rich and successful and whatever. And I remember like being just in a great mood, finally kind of breaking through that, you know, you have to go through like an 18-month period where your brain is rewiring itself and you have to learn, you have to relearn again that going on a date is exciting. Eating a hot fudge sundae is exciting. Taking a walk is exciting. Like, you know, because for the first 18 months, it's like, this fucking sucks and I want to smoke crack, or this sucks and I want to shoot heroin. Like your brain is so twisted up, or let me speak for myself. My brain was so, you know, aberrated from shooting all of that shit into my veins and smoking all of that shit that it took about 18 months for me to be able to appreciate a sunset or a sunrise again, or to appreciate a nice meal. And I remember, so I just started feeling better. I was a couple years, clean and sober, and I was helping this guy. And I remember telling him, we were sitting at this restaurant called Marmalade, and I was like, yeah, man, and I want to do this and I want to do that. And, you know, I want to be successful like you. I want to like have money and be successful. And this guy looked at me in all seriousness and he goes, it's too late. And I'm like, what? And he goes, wait, you're almost 40 years old. It's too late. Oh. And I just fucking died on the inside. I just, he didn't do it intentionally, but it sucked the life out of me. I was staying in his guest house because I still, 2 years in, I still didn't have my own place. I was staying in his guest house because he was remodeling a big house here in Malibu. And he had this guest house. It didn't have electricity, but it had running water. And, you know, during the day it had an ocean view. So I was super stoked just to have a roof over my head. But I went back and I lit my little candle and I, you know, kicked my Think and Grow Rich across the room. And I like, you know, like sat down on my blow up air mattress and I fucking cried myself to sleep. I'm like, it's too late. It's too late. I think I was 36. I was 36 at that time. And like, fuck, you know, I'm fucked. My life sucks. I'm never going to have anything. And that's how it was in the beginning. And remember, I'm working at two rehabs at this time. I'm working at the Canyon and the Malibu Ranch. I'm walking dogs on the side, washing dogs on the side, washing cars on the side, and cleaning apartments. So
damn, you're hustling.
I had to hustle because there was no, you know, my family doesn't have any dough. I mean, my mom was living below the level of poverty at that time. And which leads me to my next, you know, my next clue for anyone who is searching as to how did this fucking moron that can't spell and can't type and doesn't even have a high school diploma, how did he become rich and successful? At that time, right at that time, my mom got sick. My mom got cancer and she was 67 years old. And my mother's always been very frail and broke. I mean, my mother just can't, you put money in her hand and it falls right through. I mean, she had that poverty mentality. Anyway, she was broke and she got cancer and I didn't have the money to help her and I didn't have the money to even go back and visit. And that was the paradigm shift for me. That was the moment where everything shifted and everything changed. Some people get sick themselves, or some people lose a loved one, or some people's best friend overdoses and dies. But there's typically a moment in most people with long-term recovery, there's typically a moment where an event happens that is either going to break you or make you.
Right. Yeah.
And that moment, when I realize what a piece of shit I was and what a failure I was and what a mess I had made of my life because I wanted to get high all the time. And look, we could go on a mining expedition and talk about the incest that I had to suffer through and the violence that I had to suffer through as a child and all of the horrific things that happened to me. At the end of the day, I didn't get high because someone touched my naughty spot. I didn't get high because someone held me down and did things to me against my will. I didn't get high because my father was a violent fucking monster. I got high because it felt great and because I'm selfish. That's why I got high. It has nothing to do with all that shit. We all have these sad stories of I was abandoned and I was molested and I was all of that and above. That's not why I got high. I got high because it felt great and I'm fucking selfish. And my feeling great is more important than your feelings and my mother's feelings and society's feelings. And I'm going to do whatever I have to do in order to feel great. And that is just the sad truth. And if we want empirical evidence of that, because it's not conjecture, I've met a multitude of people in my life that have suffered far worse than me as a child. They never got high. Some of them never even touched a drop of alcohol. And if we really, really want the ultimate example, let's look at Oprah. She was raped by her own uncle. She was beaten. She was born black in a time when being born black was really, truly a mark against you. She was poor. She struggled with her weight. She, in other words, Oprah had everything against her. Got pregnant at 13 or 14, raped by her uncle, et cetera, et cetera. She didn't go smoke crack or shoot heroin. She didn't go, you know, cheat on every person that ever tried to love her and act like a fucking monster like I did. She went on to help probably, a 100 million people. She inspired a generation of men and women, black and white.
Right.
Oprah went on to do such amazing things after going through much worse than any of us could ever imagine. So there are no excuses.
Right. One thing, I did read an article where Oprah did have a relationship with drugs. She did have, she did have, and this was like before she was Oprah.
Okay.
Like before she came into the scene. But when, I guess when in her early 20s, I want to say that she did have an addiction to drugs. I believe it was cocaine, but don't quote me on that.
Oh, I love it.
I do specifically remember, but obviously she overcame it.
Right. So that makes her even more of a rock star in my eyes. I hope that's true. I mean, I'm going to ask her when I see her, because that's like one of my little dreams is to, I want to make Oprah a smoothie. So I hope it's the case. I hope she you know, that to me makes her even a better human being and more of a rock star. It just, and you know, the point is we drink and we get high and we cheat and we do all these things because it's about me. It's about self-pity.
Right.
And it's about the inability to grow up, take responsibility for our lives and form true partnerships with other human beings. That's just the way it goes. I mean, it sucks sometimes.
Yeah. You know?
Sometimes I'm really, really hurting. Right now is one of them.
Yeah.
I'm going through a major, major crisis in business, and I, you know, I'm not going to bore people with the details, but I wanted to start a little mom and pop juice bar because I selfishly wanted to go to a place where everything was 100% certified organic and amazing, and where cool people worked, and where I didn't have to like get lectured by white kids with dreadlocks and dirt under their nails that stunk like patchouli on, why aren't you vegan, man? Like I wanted to go into a health food store without being punished. So I opened up my own.
Let me judged. Yeah.
Yeah. And judged. And, and I opened up my own and it, you know, and it was amazing. And me and my girlfriend opened it and, it took off like wildfire. It took off like you know, like I never could have imagined. I thought I was making amazing money. You know, for me anyway, when I owned Riviera Recovery, which I started on a shoestring and a prayer. That was a transitional living home that I started after working all those jobs and saving all that money. But, you know, I was making like 20 or 30 grand a month, sometimes more. And to me, that's rich. To me, that's like fucking rich. I'm from Ohio.
Yeah. In
Malibu, where I now live, that's like entry level. Like, you maybe live in a trailer park here if you make 30 or 40 grand a month. And I mean that definitively. That's not like kind of sort of like, if you make that kind of money, you can hopefully afford one of the trailer park homes in the Point Dume Club or in Paradise Cove. But even Paradise Cove now, I think everything in there is $1.2 million, $1.5 million and up. So I'm being serious. But for me, coming from Ohio, I used to live under a bridge, you know, used to work in a rehab for 10 bucks an hour. Making 30, 40 grand a month was insane, and I felt rich. But I opened up the juice bar, and it was awesome. But the contrast of serving people juices and making people smoothies and acai bowls and having old ladies come in and kiss me on the mouth and have little kids come running in and yelling my name and, you know, smoothie guy, smoothie. Like, the contrast of then going back and working with drug addicts and alcoholics, many of whom didn't want to be there, whose parents were forcing them to be there. The contrast was too stark. And and so I sold it for like nothing. I sold it to a guy named Jose for like pennies on the dollar. And I started I sold the rehab. Yeah.
Okay.
And I then, for good or bad, and, you know, that next book is not yet to have been written, the story of Sun Life, I then went and opened up a bunch more, and now there's 14 of them.
And what?
Yeah.
There's 14?
Yeah. In different states, even.
Holy shit.
Yeah. So we'll do like $17 million this year in sales, and it's been 8 years, and I've yet to take a penny in profit. I mean, that is one of the most mind-boggling experiences of my life. Is to, I'm super comfortable. I did sell a small piece of the company a couple of years ago because I was paranoid about the economy collapsing again, and so I was able to, you know, sell a small piece of the company and buy myself a little townhome that I live in. That's amazing. I have a nice little, you know, Volvo SUV. So I'm super stoked. I'm not singing the blues by any means.
Right.
But I live off of a very modest salary if the company can afford to pay me. And all the money has gone into growth. And everyone thinks like, oh man, the dude's charging $18 for a smoothie or whatever. Yeah, try to make one at home for less.
Yeah.
I mean, our margins are at best 10%.
Whoa.
At best.
Yeah.
And I challenge anybody to go to Whole Foods or go to, you know, whatever you have in your hometown and try to make 100% certified organic smoothie with the quality of ingredients that we are using. It's just not reality. I mean, the real funny, a lot of times when people interview me, they're like, tell me about this $1 billion acai bowl that you're charging 35 bucks for. Don't you think that's a ripoff? Here's the craziest shit. It's literally the least profitable item on the menu.
Right. It probably costs you like 32 to make it.
Right. And with the labor and the rent and everything, like, please don't get the $1 billion bowl if you come visit LA or Scottsdale, Arizona or Austin, Texas. Get a peanut butter and chocolate smoothie so I can make a couple bucks.
Help a brother out. Shit.
Yeah. So yeah, it's an interesting journey, and I'm grateful, but I definitely would be lying if I didn't think back to the days when I could just go deposit 30K in my bank account and just go do some retail therapy and buy another watch and buy another sweatshirt. Not that that ultimately fulfilled me, because, you know, anybody that's experienced any type of success will tell you that after Maslow, I'm totally murdering that name, but what is it called? Maslow's hierarchy, where you where there's a roof over your head and you're, yeah, you know, in the town that you're in and you have transportation, you have your food. I think that's called Maslow's hierarchy. And I'm probably,
yeah,
but either way, once that stuff is met, more money, more watches, more cars are definitely not going to make you happier.
I mean, it right,
doesn't work like that. But I miss those days. I don't like being in a crisis right now. I had to fire a bunch of people on my corporate staff and lay off some people, and it's scary. However, yeah, I'm clean and sober, and I can pick up the phone and I can call somebody. I have to be 100% transparent with people. I do not go to meetings.
Okay.
I haven't been to meetings in a couple of years, other than, you know, if someone asks me to go, I'll go, or if it's someone's mm-hmm. sober birthday, I'll go. But in terms of like me on my own volition going, you know, I used to go 7 days a week, twice a day, no matter what, for like the first 5 to 7 years, 7 days a yeah. week, 2 meetings a day, no matter what. A lot of them, yes, were because I was working in recovery at that time. But even if I had a chance and I wasn't for some strange reason working, I would go. Part of the reason, because I had nowhere else to go and I was a fucking loser. Part of the reason was because I was chasing after newcomer girls and trying to fill the hole inside my chest. Mm. And that sense of emptiness and that overwhelming sense of impending doom. And part of it because it fucking works. It just works. I don't know how it works. I have a very interesting relationship with 12-step meetings because I know they work. If my day gets bad enough today, I will get in my car yeah. and I will drive to a meeting.
Okay.
My days typically don't get that bad because I'm surrounded by sober people.
Right.
I'm successful. I do yoga. I meditate. I pray. I have a great relationship with, you know, with my higher power, or God forbid I use the word God.
God forbid.
Yeah. God forbid. So my life is pretty good, but I'm not one of those mm-hmm. like Bible beating or big book beating 12-step diehard. Like if you don't go to meetings, you're going to die. Like,
oh God. Yes.
I don't subscribe to that.
Yeah.
If you don't maintain your spiritual condition, mm-hmm. you will relapse and die, or be a miserable fuck.
Yeah. But, miserable. Absolutely.
Yeah. But I mean, if you're new, yeah, get your ass to a meeting. Just shut the fuck up and go to a meeting. I hate to say that, but that's what they said to me. And I hated it, but they were right and it worked. In my first 10 years of going to meetings, I never went to a meeting and left feeling worse. I always felt better.
Okay.
Well,
that's saying something.
I can't say the same anymore. Probably because my head is so noisy now and I have a little bit of success.
Okay.
I've been to a few meetings where, yeah, I left feeling worse. I've also been to some meetings where I didn't know if I should open my eyes in the morning or open my wrist, and I left the meeting feeling absolutely happy and whole. And, you know, what do they say? Happily and usefully whole. Yeah. I left feeling happily and usefully whole.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's a visual.
Yeah.
I want to jump back to, you said to fill that hole.
Yeah.
What do you do now to fill that hole and to I guess fill that void?
Well, it's a lot easier to fill that void when you have success and your needs are met.
Okay.
You know, I live in Malibu. I live in a beautiful townhome. I drive a beautiful car that my business takes care of. I have full medical insurance, which to you guys up there
medical
doesn't mean a lot.
Yeah,
it doesn't mean a lot up there, but down here it means a lot.
Living a life.
Yeah, I lived like 20 years without medical insurance, and I got all the food I want. I have a ton of American Express points from the businesses that I own. So I can travel anywhere I want. I can stay anywhere I want, and it doesn't cost me a penny. So it's a lot easier to meditate when you got dough in the bank and your life is really comfortable. It really is. It's a lot easier to pray and meditate when you're physically in great shape and healthy and eating healthy foods. Back my early recovery when I was broke and I was smoking a pack and a half of Camel Lights a day and you know, drinking 5 Coca-Colas a day and copious amounts of coffee and energy drinks to keep moving forward. It was really hard to pray back then. It was hard to fill that hole. It was hard to fill the void. Because I was just, I just was so empty and broken. I mean, I'm with somebody now that loves me, that's beautiful and amazing. And I have an awesome cat. I always have fresh orchids all over the place and crystals everywhere. And I take walks on the beach most mornings and do yoga. And I have a couple of saunas here in my house and a steam room. And I sound like such an LA pretentious asshole right now, but you asked me, so I'm being honest.
I love it.
There's a lot of different ways that I contend with my existential angst and my emptiness and, you know, and my still at times lingering sense of worthlessness and insecurity. I mean,
right.
But working my ass off, saving my money, investing my money, it just makes it a lot easier. I know they say that money can't buy you happiness in a sense, but when I was making 10 bucks an hour and I didn't have a place to live and I was sleeping on an air mattress and driving a car with over 200,000 miles on it that smelled like hot garbage, it was really, really hard. And those meetings were so necessary. But things are a lot different now.
Yeah. I mean, I don't think money necessarily buys you happiness. I think it absolutely buys you freedom.
Yeah.
In every aspect of your life.
Yes, that is very true. But, and I don't know where you live or what it's like up there, but in a town like LA or a town like New York, money absolutely positively will buy you happiness up to about $250,000 to $300,000 a year. If you're living in LA, and you're making, you know, 50 grand a year trying to pay your bills, and then all of a sudden someone gives you a job making $300,000 a year and your bills are paid and you have enough money in savings to last a year without a job and you can fly first class and you never have to look at the prices on a menu again, trust me, you are a lot more happier. And that extra money will absolutely buy you happiness. After that amount of money, there's zero return on investment in terms of happiness.
Right.
If you go from making 300 grand a year to making a million a year, you are not going to be any happier. If you go from making 300 grand a year to making 10 million a year, you're not going to be happier. And chances are your happiness might even diminish a little bit. Or a lot. The whole like mo money, mo problems, like borrowed from the urban culture, rap songs, whatever, there is an element of truth to that. There is, like, you know, look, I got 500 employees now. I'm in the middle of a major business crisis right now. There was something incredibly profound and beautiful back when I was newly sober and I was living up at the top of Topanga at this dude's house. He would let me stay there for free. And I didn't have anything and I didn't need anything and I didn't want anything. There was a few moments like that. Mm-hmm. Most of that early recovery was just tons of depression and anxiety and fear and all that. But I do remember a couple of moments where I was like sitting in this dude's backyard and there's like butterflies everywhere and like hummingbirds. And he was completely unkept and unmanicured. He was a biker. I don't mean like a bicyclist, but like, you know, one of those dudes that you meet at a 12-step meeting that's covered in tats and drives a Harley.
Yep.
I was staying at a dude
very
like
familiar.
That. Yeah, well, he was letting me stay at his place, and I don't think he had a gardener, but I was in his backyard and like sitting next to this little pond and watching the butterflies land and watching the hummingbirds go, you know, to and fro. And I was like doing my little morning prayers, drinking my morning coffee. And I had a couple of moments like that where there was such beauty and simplicity in life. I'm struggling to get back to that with all that's going on. And you know, now there's moments where I'm in fucking Bora Bora and I'm diving into see-through water and looking at this amazing over the water hut that I get to stay in because I worked hard and got sober. So there's different kinds of enjoyment and stuff like that. But
Right.
Money will buy you happiness up to a certain point. And then beyond that, you can't really buy more.
Yeah.
But if you're broke and you're working for minimum wage and someone tells you that money can't buy you happiness, they're not being honest with you, because it can and it will. And I would encourage anybody just to work really, really hard and save your money and invest your money.
Yeah. Well, now being on the other side, you know, of the coin, what would be your definition of rich? Like, not necessarily monetarily wise, but what makes you feel rich inside?
I mean, my stuff, it might be silly to other people. I mean, the most important thing for me was taking care of my mom, going back to Ohio and buying my mom a house and spoiling the shit out of her. That's it. I mean, for me, that's rich. That's everything. For me, that's manhood. For me, that's taking care of everything. Beyond that, being able to look at my girlfriend and say, I'm going to take care of everything and you don't have to work. If you want to work, go work and go have an amazing career and do whatever you want. But if you don't want to, I will pay for everything. That to me is one of the coolest fucking things ever. And to be able to back it up as well. I mean, I fantasized about shit like that when I was a little kid. And I'm not in any way trying to imply that women shouldn't work, because women should go do whatever the fuck they want. Women should run the world. Women are sacred. Women are fucking, women are gods. And men are little fucking rats scurrying around at their feet. And somehow men have convinced women that it's the opposite, and it's such bullshit. Women should stop fighting for equality and just recognize their superiority, because that's reality. That is, women are fucking gods. Women, you guys create life, or you guys have the ability. How about that? You guys have the ability to create life within yourself. Are you fucking kidding me? You're gods. That's what God does. God creates life. You are gods. Men, what? We build buildings and write songs and fight wars. And you know why we do all that shit? It's to be near you guys. It's to get your love. It's to get your approval. It's to get your acceptance. Somehow that message got translated wrong. Somehow men, with their fucking evilness and their violence, have convinced you guys otherwise. You guys don't have to fight for equality. You are superior. You are the gods walking this earth. We are the fucking little rodents crawling around at your feet, desperately trying to be near you. Know that and walk with that. Walk with that knowledge, and you won't have to fight for anything.
I am not going to disagree with you. I love that. And thank you so much for saying that.
It's the truth. It's the truth. I challenge anybody to argue that point with me. It's reality. Will science someday give men the ability to create life within themselves? I don't fucking know, and I don't care. That's not how we were born. How we were born is we chop wood and carry water, and women are gods. So done. Period. End of story.
Fine by me.
So taking care of my mom is rich. That's rich to me. Being able to spoil the shit out of my girlfriend is rich to me. And then, like, some weird stuff that I don't really mention. Not having to ever use an alarm clock. That feels super rich to me.
Yeah.
I fucking hate alarm clocks. And just the fact that, like, hearing one go off and then having that rush of cortisol hit my bloodstream and start to eat me alive. I fucking hate alarm clocks. Not having to look at prices on menus, not having to budget to a certain extent. I love the fucking miles, the frequent flyer miles and the credit card miles. I think that's one of the most underrated things about being rich. My girlfriend and I just went to Cabo San Lucas, and we stayed at the Nobu Hotel. And the trip was paid for with American Express points. The whole thing, everything. Like, it was I didn't even know that was possible. Like, I knew you could get airline tickets.
I didn't know that either.
You can get anything with those points. You can even use them on PayPal. So, I mean, that felt really, really rich to me. I had never done that before. I've been on a bunch of really, really, really expensive vacations that my rich friends have taken me on. And all
your Instagram is quite impressive. It's like a brochure for fancy vacations. I love it.
Yeah,
I
always my Instagram is insane. What you're doing. And it's very, very shallow, very pretentious, and very glossy. And it's a lot of smoke and mirrors. And that's not my real life most of the time. Most of my life in real life, I work for a cat.
Okay.
I have an 11-pound Cornish Rex named Krishna with two different colored eyes, and I work for her. I get up every morning, I clean out her litter box, I brush her, I bathe her every 2 weeks, I buy her gifts, I feed her, I chase after her. Like, my cat is my boss, and then my girlfriend. Pretty much everything I do for her, because I want her to be comfortable and I want her to be happy. And she has her own career. She does her own thing. She has her own money. She's not dependent on me whatsoever, but that's not going to stop me from spoiling the shit out of her. That's
so nice. It's so cute. Yeah.
It sucks that it took me this long or this late in life to wake up to the fact that women are sacred. And I'm just going to keep repeating that line: women are sacred. Because I want women to remember that. I want anyone who's struggling with addiction or alcoholism or any type of addiction to know that they can change, and they can change in such a profound way that within a short period of time, they won't even recognize themselves. And I want women to remember that they're sacred. Those are my two messages.
Well, that is a great takeaway and a perfect segue to end this amazing conversation. Khalil, thank you so much for your insight, your knowledge and experiences. It's been absolutely amazing talking to you.
Amazing talking to you, and call me anytime. You have my number, DM me. If you're going to be in LA, definitely hit me up, because I want to treat you to some smoothies and juices. And did I get to do that? Did I get to treat you to some smoothies?
No.
You guys went on your own?
Yeah.
Okay, well, I want to treat you next time. So next time you're down here with your friends, because they were so sweet, next time you're down here, please hit me up. And yeah, for anybody out there listening, if you want to suffer through my shallow, pretentious lifestyle on Instagram, it's at Khalil Rafati. It's just my first and last name, at Khalil Rafati. If you're in LA or Austin, Texas, or Scottsdale, Arizona, and soon to be other states, please, please, please come by Sun Life Organics. It's Sun Life, like life in the sun, Organics. And also, if you could do me a huge favor and follow us at Sun Life Organics. It's not that great. It's a lot of pictures of acai bowls and smoothies, but I would just really appreciate the support. My book is I Forgot to Die. It's available on Amazon, Kindle, and Audible. I Forgot to Die.
Yes.
My next book is coming out in a couple months.
It is?
Remembering to Live. Yeah. Remembering to Live, Lessons I Learned Crawling Out of Hell.
Oh my God. I love it. I love the title of your books.
Thank you. Please, please, please follow me and stay in touch with me. And God bless everybody. And I wish all of you not just a happy new year, not just a happy new decade, but I wish every one of you all the best that life has to offer, because you deserve it. And if you're a woman, you're sacred, and don't forget it.
Hell yes. I love it. Thank you so, so much. Ladies, you heard it straight from the horse's mouth. We are sacred and we are goddesses, and don't you forget it. And thanks, Khalil, for reminding us. As always, thank you guys so much for listening. I couldn't do this without you. And you know what? I would really, really love it if you could write a review, subscribe, give us a share, let me know what you think of the podcast. Feedback is so important. And of course, this is a numbers game, so let's get those numbers up so we can help more people. The more people we help, the better off we all are. Wouldn't you agree? Check us out on Facebook and Instagram at A Sober Girls Guide and the blog. Don't sleep on the blog. We have a lot of how-tos, tips, and tricks. And this week we've had some amazing stories from two very influential celebrities and women in our community. Kelly Ripa and Jessica Simpson are joining our crew of sober girls. Yay! Thank you guys so much for listening. Have a great day.